Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And now for something completely different.
Hey, I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm in 3 Halls of Fame. For the young fans, they don't give a damn. They just give a damn about themselves and what they're hearing now. And I got no problem with those rules. I know the rules going in. I'm happy to play the game that way.
And when Ivan came off with that knee drop from the top rope and he pinned me, I thought that something happened. I couldn't hear a thing. You could have heard a pin drop in that arena. It touched me so deeply that when I went in the dressing room, I really felt depressed.
I'll tell you that, I'll tell you right to his face. And with Hogan and I, if he wanted to get in a real street fight with me, trust me, he would lose. And he knew it.
You know, that's the other thing. They give you the belt, and they're like, okay, you're in charge of me. I was like, what?
When you mentioned a guy like Harley Race, that kind of legendary status, it's obvious why people would get upset.
As far as I'm concerned, Roddy Piper was not a wrestler. He wasn't even a good worker. If he had to go out and work his way to the top and not have good friends like Jim Barnett. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. He's just not a tough guy.
Bro, I swear to you, I don't have an ego. Like, I don't give a crap. That stuff is not important to me. People don't know me. They have no idea of who I am. They know of me as being a fictional character that they saw on TV.
People didn't understand that, you know, the guy they saw in the ring that happened to be using his real name and happened to actually be the president of the company, they really believed that that guy that they loved to hate was actually a pretty decent guy. And I think many people have the perception that I really was that character.
Hello and welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, a very special guest, ECW original, ECW referee. He is none other than Mr. Jim Molyneux. Jim, welcome to the two-man power trip. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
What is going on in your world? Have you been up to anything wrestling-related lately?
No, I've actually taken the month of March off. I had a little setback with a knee problem, so I thought, well, let me take the month of March off just to make sure. And I'll be back in the ring and appearances and everything, in April at the WrestleMania weekend. So I'll be involved in some WrestleCon things and local shows.
Oh, there's going to be a lot going on that weekend. Oh, I feel like almost too much.
Yeah, it can be too much.
Like, as soon as one person starts, like, oh, WWE's coming to town, then they book a building, then they book building, then 10 people
right.
book the ECW arena. It's just crazy. It's too much.
There are buildings being booked that I never heard of.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I forget. There was some, like, decent show, and I was like, where the hell is that in Philly? Because I know a little bit about the area. I mean, I've been there 1,000 times, but I'm like, where the hell is that?
Yeah, I had to look. I was booked for one, and it got canceled, and I had to look the place up. It was a ballroom. In Center City. I was like, well, okay.
I guess anything where there's going to be thousands of fans, they're just trying to, you know, latch on a bit to WWE.
Yeah, something that'll fit a ring and give you enough ceiling space. I guess they're booking.
Now, as far as getting into the business, I wanted to ask you just ECW original technically or not? Because there's some guys that I've talked to about being an original, and they'll tell me, they're like AJ Petruzzi. He says, I am an original because he was there. You know what I mean? Like, so would you consider yourself a true original?
Sure, because I came from the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, which was the predecessor to ECW. And I never left. I didn't leave ECW until it shut down. And there were only two of us, myself and John Finnegan, the other referee. Everyone else at one time had maybe left and came back or just plain old left before it was the show was over for us. But yeah, we're the only ones who were there the entire time.
True originals and obviously true diehards. You guys, like you said, stay to the bitter end.
Either diehard, just, you know, plain old stupid.
It is funny, though, when you think about, like, ECW and everything, everyone always thinks, like, Heyman was the owner and Heyman was the boss, but not really. You know, I don't know about that. Like, he kind of changed the narrative of history. Like, he changed history and it changed people's perception of it. Then it became real.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it started out with Todd Gordon owning the company and changing hands eventually down the line. Even Paul wasn't even the first booker. Even Eddie Gilbert wasn't the first booker for ECW. It was Larry Winters who was the booker at Tri-State when they restarted ECW, or when they started ECW. It grew out of what was whoever was invited from Tri-State. It was mostly everyone. From the local guys, and then, you know, and Larry, and then we were ready to do the television. They brought in Eddie Gilbert, had, you know, obviously had TV experience, booking TV, and when Eddie had a fallout with Todd or was offered the book in Puerto Rico, however you look at it, man, Paulie was right there. He was already with the company, so he was right there ready to step in.
What did you think of Eddie Gilbert? Did you like him, get along with him? What did you think about him just as far as being the booker?
Yeah, I liked him as a booker. I was a little nervous around him because when he took over, a lot of guys from Memphis started showing up. And I was like, wonder if I'm going to be replaced.
Right.
Yeah, and that happened obviously a lot in the territorial days. You know, so a new booker would come in and bring his guys with him to the territory. And when he got let go and moved on somewhere else, the guys would probably go with him too, or a good amount of them would. So I was kind of afraid then, but now luckily I was able to stick around through all the different regimes of the company.
When you look at Paul and he comes in, you know, he's doing the new Rockney stuff and all, did you think like, okay, this guy, you know, not genius per se, but did you think, okay, this guy, he's got something, he's going to lead us into, you know, the right direction?
Oh yeah. I under the impression that, you know, he knows what he's doing. I obviously knew his work. So it wasn't like, you know, he was someone I never heard of or someone that wasn't that good. Knew what he was doing, knew how to promote things, how to, and, you know, obviously we found out he knew how to, pick out person the high spots of a person and cover up their low spots. So yeah, and like I said, he was already there. It wasn't, you know, shocking like they had brought somebody in from another company or a territory. I keep throwing back to the territories, but you know, we really kind of were one of the last territories there was.
Yep. When you look at Heyman, though, why do you think he was kind of dead set on getting rid of the history of ECW as far as him saying he's the owner? Like, why do you think that that was so important to do that?
Well, I think it has to do with the name change. When Todd Gordon owned Eastern and Paul Heyman owned Extreme. I think that's the difference in his mind, probably. I can't jump into his head, and I kind of really don't want to.
Did you get along with Paulie?
Oh yeah, rode with him a lot, drove him a lot. I was one of the guys that was relied on to drive the guys or the important guys. Some of the people that were sneaking in or Paul himself drove Paul quite a bit. And had a lot of conversations with him, and not just about wrestling. Conversations about, you know, other stuff. He loved talking about tennis. He was a big tennis fan. He played tennis in high school.
Wow, never realized that. Wow.
Yeah, I think he like was highly ranked in high school. And, you know, we had discussions about in the actor studio. It was a big show at the time. And we would just, you know, just one of those things we would catch in the hotel rooms and talk about it. And, you know, we kind of, I think he kind of picked up on a lot of things from that show to help guys bring out their characters and find their place in the lineup.
So you were highly trusted, if you know what I mean. Like, you're driving him around, you're driving important people. They trusted you.
Yeah. You could say when the company shut down, probably the reason I didn't get invited to a lot of the reunion things was because they may have been too close. And they may have, well, a lot of people think I was Paulie Stooge, but I was not. I was not privy to anything. And if I was, I didn't pass it along.
Do you get annoyed when people say that or think that, or you just ignore it?
I've come to ignore. I haven't heard it for years anyway, but I've ignored it for a while.
When Paulie does take over, obviously Extreme, and it takes you guys get pay-per-view, and you know, you just start going in that direction where you're starting to blow up. Are you thinking like, wow, we're the number three company, or like, does that even like come across in your mind? Like, oh my God, we were this little small little territory, and then now we're growing to like the number three company worldwide.
Yeah, you know, I looked at it as we were number three, like, you know, WWE and WCW were here, but we were still way down here. We were still far behind, but we were gaining ground. At least I felt we were. We were doing, you know, we had some decent buildings that we were able to fill up on a regular basis when we went to those towns other than Philadelphia. And you know, we were getting syndication or syndicated throughout. We had a TV deal that ended up, you know, stinking like anything. But, you know, I thought that was a step in the right direction. It turned out not to be, but, you know, wow, we're on network television. My parents can see this show now on the other side of the country where they didn't have any of this local syndication.
You feel like that was almost a bad thing that happened to ECW? Not that you're on national TV, but like the deal that you got, like that stinks. The video game deal kind of stunk. The pay-per-view deal, you know, it's like a 40-60 kind of deal. Do you feel like some of those deals are just sucked for ECW at the time?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, it was, let's do this so we can get on pay-per-view. Let's do this so we can get on national television. Let's do this so we can get a record deal. Let's do this so we can get a video game. And then the next time around, we can up it, you know, and that next time never came around for any of those.
Yeah. And even the action figures, like, oh, finally get figures. But then it's like the like, oh, you really got to use that company. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the company went out of business before it was time to do any more.
Yeah. Yep. It almost always felt like every deal ECW made was always like, oh, it's not a great business decision. Maybe you have to do it, but it's not a great business decision.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think a lot of the decisions, and they weren't all Paul's. There were money people behind the scenes too. A lot of them, I think, had that thought in mind that, you know, it's not a great deal, but we need to get on TV nationally. We need to, you know, get some national exposure with, you know, figures and game, the whole bit.
Now, some of those people that were behind the scenes ECW that don't get talked about financially, is that supposed to be like a secret forever? Or like, do they never want to say that they were giving money to ECW for some reason?
I don't know. I mean, it was coming from different places. Where it was coming from, all I don't know. But, you know, all of a sudden there would be this new guy behind, you know, hanging out in the back. And like, who is this guy? We don't know who he is and how we should be acting around them. You know, whether we should kayfabe the guy or not. But you know, there were people that everybody knew about that, you know, were helping to finance the company, and they went on to do other things with other companies and starting their own. Like, they would, stream best ofs, you know, the best of, you know, Tito Santana or whatever. And they, you know, they were buying up libraries of, you know, Sivaldi and things like that. And that's how they stayed. They stayed in the business that way, not by putting on events, but, you know, doing, you know, little pay-per-views that you see for your $10.99 for an hour of, like I said, Tito Santana or whatever.
Right. so interesting, like some of Paul's business practices, right? It seems like he's so smart wrestling wise, but business wise, he's kind of all over the place. It always can. It seems like that from interviewing all the guys.
Yeah. Yeah. He was all over, you know, he was looking to make a deal, whatever deal he could keep that would make the, you know, keep the company afloat, he was willing to make.
What do you think about him going into the WWE Hall of Fame? Were you shocked to see that or no?
No, I kind of anticipated, you know, as soon as they announced WrestleMania in Philly, like, well, there has to be some kind of ECW tie. And the obvious one was Paul because he works for them. I would love to have seen them say, we're going to put ECW as an entity into the Hall of Fame. I think it's the only company that you can do that with. I don't see, you know, them paying tribute to Mid-South or AWA and, you know, doing something like that. But I thought maybe they could do that. But, you know, Paul, I guess Paul's a good representative of the company. We'll find out when, you know, when his speech happens.
He's a good talker, that's for sure. So the speech should be good. I mean, high hopes anyway for it, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
Who do you think should induct him?
Who do I hope or who do I think?
Well, both. Yeah, have it both.
Well, I think it might be I think it would probably be Bruce Pritchard, just because there have been some guys have been kind of pushed out of the system to do it. Maybe Tommy Dreamer, because they have a bit of a working relationship with Impact. But I personally, I'd like to see what would happen if Brian Gerwitz inducted him after they had that backstage argument.
Wow, that would be an interesting one, yeah. I figured they might do like Roman, just because that's like the current guy that he's with. I figured maybe they would do that to induct him, but I don't know if that would fit.
Yeah, but they don't seem to take the main eventers for WrestleMania and involve them
with the
Hall of Fame, you know, unless it's an Undertaker or someone like that. And I don't know, just for some reason, Pritchard seems to come up. You know, they're like I said, they're other people that probably would have been better, but they because of recent happenings in the news, they're kind of pushed out of the picture.
And Bruce and Paulie go all the way back because there was that WWE behind the scenes deal with ECW back then, which I guess was orchestrated by Bruce.
Yeah. So it might be kind of logical. If he would come out of his house, I'd like to hear Jim Cornette do it.
Oh, that would be an awesome one. Yeah. That would be amazing to get those two together.
Yeah, because otherwise,
the best talkers.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, there are no managers in the wrestling history left that you could do it. We don't have Captain Lou or Freddie Blassie
or the Wizard,
or Bobby Heenan and the Wizard. Any of those guys around anymore? So you know, it would be good to hear that.
Yeah, his mentors, some of those guys, Blassie and the Wizard and Albano. Yeah, that would have been cool. What about somebody said this, which would be kind of funny, like the Sandman? I was thinking, like, that would be interesting. Like, how would that speech go? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even think you could see the cue cards for the speech.
Don't let him go off the cuff and do whatever he wants and ad-lib.
Right. Yeah, I don't need cue cards. Oh, no.
It seemed like RVD was putting his name in the hat that he wanted to do it.
Yeah. Rob would probably be a good one. I know Rob's going to be in town.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's an event that I'm going to referee, and I know he has a match on the card, so that might be interesting.
Oh, nice. Yeah, he'll probably be at like seven shows that week.
That's right. I don't know if Rob's the closest to being able to do like seven shows in like a 30-day weekend
he's in awesome shape.
Yeah, he's in great shape, but you know we are hitting a certain age.
Yeah, that's true. Feels like with him though, he's getting like more and more in shape because the last time I saw him in AEW, he looked real good.
Yeah. I saw the match he had teaming with Hook.
Yep.
He looked really good, and he still, you know, no problem flying through the air.
Yeah, he still got those spring in his legs. Yeah, for sure.
I don't know how he does it. It's, must be his workout regimen and his genetics.
Definitely, definitely. And maybe it's all that smoke that he does. And maybe that's actually helpful.
Maybe. Maybe that could, that might help me in the long run.
Now, with that WWF ECW stuff, did you guys know that behind the scenes? Was that like a known thing with the boys in the locker room that WWF was helping you guys?
I think some of them may have been prompted to it. I think most of us kind of thought it, because we would have people show up that were WWE talent, looking for, you know, a couple of matches, or, and we knew they were getting paid. Al Snow, Furness and LaFon,
when the Brackus showed up.
Yeah, Brackus. You know, there were a couple of guys that, you know, showed up, and we weren't really training them, but we were giving them an opportunity to get matches under the belt. Draws is another one.
Yeah. Yep.
So I kind of figured something was up. We're, you know, we're getting some financial help out of this by bringing this guy in or that guy in.
When you're with ECW and you guys are getting the pay-per-views, and like you said, maybe eventually you guys get the TV, all this other stuff. You, when you're there, because I've talked to so many of the guys, D-Von and Dreamer, Incredible. It was like, you don't just have one job. And like, as you're growing, they keep giving you more jobs. Did you have other jobs other than referee? Like, and you, I know you said you're driving guys around and stuff. So even more responsibilities outside of that?
Yeah. I mean, just to help get everybody out of the building, if it was payday night and we actually were handing out checks, I would, you know, hand out the checks. You know, they'd be written out, and they'd fold it in half, and here, this is Axel's, here, this is Devon's, you know, do that. Also, toward the end of the company, maybe last 2 years, year and a half, I did promotional stuff behind the scenes. So I would travel to a town that maybe we're at in 2 or 3 weeks, and meet up with the street team and make sure they had all the flyers and this and that, and put some stuff out ourselves, and deal with any issues with, you know, a radio station or with Ticketmaster or whoever was distributing our tickets, and the box office check with the building, all that kind of stuff. And then I'd go and catch up to wherever we were that weekend. So I would leave the house on a Tuesday morning, first flight out Tuesday morning, and I'd be coming home Sunday afternoon. So it was full time at the end of the company for me.
It seems like there's not necessarily a corporate structure. It's like every man on board, all hands on deck, kind of like, hey, you're doing this, and this, like, hey, you're going to this town, right? I mean, it just seemed like that attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, Guido helped out with the merchandise. Tommy and Devon and Guido were the merchandise guys. They were, you know, packing orders for shirts, packing the van up for the weekend. And sometimes Guido would drive it to the building. So yeah, everybody chipped in where they needed to. Bubba did promotional stuff. Bubba was one of the first guys of the wrestlers that did behind the scenes stuff like that. He promoted a lot of our matches, a lot of our shows, all the stuff in New York, a lot of the stuff in Florida.
When you look at that, did that create some heat with some of the boys? Because I've heard stories like, oh, Taz put himself on the poster. Hey, this guy has more shirts than that. Like, does that not having like that corporate person necessarily like running things, does that create heat or no?
I don't think so. I didn't get a feeling of that. I think everybody was all in. You know, they were all willing to help however they could. You know, okay, great. Taz is creating shirts. You know, he's coming up with different designs, different designs of the logo, changing the logo. You know, Tommy's doing his bit. Taz and Perry were running the school. You know, everybody was chipping in. Everybody was drinking the Kool-Aid. So we were helping out wherever and however we could.
Is that one of those things you look back like, man, I shouldn't have been Jim Jones in it, if you will, shouldn't have been drinking the Kool-Aid? Is that like how you look back, or are you thinking, no, that's kind of the way it should have been, and the old guys had like the gung-ho team attitude?
Yeah, no, I think we needed to work as a team. I think the locker room would have fallen apart if we didn't. Yeah, we had, there were guys who had arguments with each other and maybe a fight would break out occasionally, but that happens in football teams and, you know, basketball teams and in any sport, any competitive thing like that. But our main competition was the other companies. And if it came to a problem with one of the guys from something on the outside, whether it was a fan or whatever, we were all there to back them up. You know, we fought within each other, but if there was a fight to break out, look out, here comes the locker room.
Now, something that kind of could have splintered the locker room was when Todd Gordon exited, but then Heyman kind of, I don't know, according to Todd, he talked to him a few times about this, Heyman created the narrative of the mole and the WCW mole and that stuff. Did you believe in that, or is any of that actually true? Because Todd says not true. It was something kind of created to bring the boys together.
Yeah, you know, I really don't know. I never spoke to Todd about it. I felt it wasn't my issue to talk with people about it. And if he wanted to talk about it, he would have with me, I would think, or at least with any of us. But it just, I didn't feel it was my place to bring it up.
Now, ECW is obviously known as being crazy. Is it as crazy as people say, like behind the scenes, or no?
Oh, no, we were very normal.
That's one of those things where I guess that's the, oh, it was insane. You know, couldn't get anything done back there. It was just, everybody's nuts. Everybody's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, everybody had to be a little crazy. But I think the stories, whoever says them when they were there and you know, our drugs were flying all over, everybody was shooting up, or everybody was smoking weed, or everybody's taking a handful of pills. It wasn't like that in the locker room. If any of that kind of stuff happened, it wasn't in the locker room. It was probably back at the hotels or in the cars or whatever. You'd come into the locker room and somebody's pulling a rib on this guy. You have Taz and Bubba playing cards in the corner with the Steiner brothers. You know, Salmon did have his beer with him. You know, everybody kind of, you know, gathered. It was a family get together every weekend, a couple times a week.
When you're the referee in ECW, I'm always curious about this. Like, when you're the ref, does he give you any instructions on pinfalls and stuff? Because it felt like you guys as referees were much more animated and like fit. I guess maybe fit what was going on in ECW. Because even like Steven D'Angelo, sometimes when he's the announcer, he's like nut, like, but if you talk to him, he's very calm. Like, was that something that was told to you guys? Hey, you got to keep with the pace of the guys and kind of be more, you know, into it than let's just say like a WWF referee or something like that.
Yeah, no, we were never told that. My opinion, and I think John Finnegan has the same opinion. I keep saying John because we were there; the two of us were there the whole time, and we had other referees in and out. You know, we had to keep it real. You know, so I think if I reacted to something in a real manner, whether it was a hip toss or whether it was going through a double flaming table, my level of reaction reflected that. And I think that you send that signal out to the fans. If, you know, I stood there with my arms crossed, like some referees do now on television, and somebody's going through a double flaming table, they're just standing there and they're waiting for the guy to be thrown back into the ring. Double flaming table, I'm going, oh my God, I'm quick trying to find a bottle of water or calling for help to make sure the guy's not on fire.
Right.
That's a human reaction. I think what led to our reputation with ECW is we gave human reactions, and other referees usually don't.
It is funny nowadays, some of the referees, some of the stuff I see, even the most simple thing of, hey, they're going to have the stare down right before the match, that you have that stare down, and it's great now even more so, but it was great back then for, like, let's say posters or whatever, you have right to stare down. Nobody goes in the middle. I've seen this so much, and it's so weird, not WWE, and on another show, where the referee stands in between them a little bit back, so they're in the shot. of the two people. Is that like a big no-no or what? Because that seems like common sense, but it almost seems like somebody should tell the ref, like, ref, what are you doing? Get out of the shot.
Yeah, no, you know, if you look at Barely Legal, I did the match between Taz and Sabu. Yep. And the tension that was built between those two for 2 years, they finally came together like this far away from each other. And they're admittedly, there's a great picture of the three of us together with them at each other. And I'm in the middle, but then you're kind of stay back. And then it comes to a point where you have to separate them. All right, let's get this match going. Instead of standing there and just watching them.
Yeah.
you have to be part of the match, but don't be the match.
Yeah, there's some refs that I've seen, and not WWE, in the other organization out there, the other big one, that they become a part of the match. And I'm just like, wow, like, is that something that needs to be told to them? Or is that's just common sense?
Yeah, with that company in particular, I think there are just as many guilty of being overly involved to as many not being involved. WWE, they're not that involved. I think one thing that helped us to be involved or gave the perception of us being involved was Joey Styles. Joey Styles made sure the referees were mentioned. If not in every match, at least every show, the referees were mentioned at least once. And, you know, how many referees can you name off the top of your head at WWE right now? Because their names get mentioned so often. And it's a shame. Right. They're part of the company. They should be mentioned more.
You think it adds legitimacy too? Like Styles says it, so it's like, wow, this guy has power. He can, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, it adds, you know, that realism to it. We don't, you know, who they are. So they could be, you know, next thing you know, they're going to have AI or they're going to just have cameras, you know, doing the count, like just show an angle of the pinfall, and you'll just see a 1, 2 and a 3 in the corner of the screen without a referee.
The thing is with some of AEW, you know, you see that or whatever, but versus WWE, but I think I've seen some things where, okay, the person's down, but forgets to kick out. So 1, 2 and the ref would just, you got to count to 3, right? If they forget to kick out.
Absolutely. If the referee does not count 3 and it's not supposed to happen, then it looks bad. But if you count 1, 2, 3 and they don't kick out, that's on them. And any good promoter or booker should stand behind the referee if they count 3 and that's supposed to be the finish of the match. And they decide to change it. That's on them. That's not on the referee. And I've seen it before. I've seen it a couple times. And the promoter goes, nope. He counted 3. That's he did his job. You didn't do yours.
So it's on the wrestler that, right. Hey, what are you doing? Why didn't you kick out? Like, what, do you have a brain fart?
Yeah. You know, the only time it happened to me once, and it was because I didn't realize the guy had been knocked out.
Wow. Who was it?
I'm not going to say.
Just, okay.
Just out of courtesy.
Okay. But they got, like, legit knocked out of the match and forgot.
Legit knocked out, and I didn't realize it, because they were still, like, moving, you know. They were unconscious, but they were moving about.
Right. Man, that's kind of scary. Like, for them, obviously, like, my God, what the hell's going on? Did they get any sort of heat? Like, hey, why didn't you kick out? Then they find out.
No, because he was out. So it wasn't just, you know, brain fart or being stupid.
Did the wrestler get in trouble at all for knocking the guy out by accident?
No, it was an accident.
But I've seen in AEW, I've seen the 1, 2, and I don't know if the person forgot to kick out or what, but they went like the ref, and then they didn't do anything, and kind of got up, and the announcers didn't know what to say. They're like, wait, what happened?
And they're all looking at each other like deer in the headlights. And
yeah, definitely.
They don't know what to that, you know, and that's one of the problems with wrestling today is going over match. You have it hours now to go over your match when you come to get to a show. So it never used to be like that. Heels were in one locker room, faces were in a different locker room. The referee came and gave you the finish, and you went over the match when you got into the ring.
Right.
you know, and you didn't have that happen, where now it happens all the time because you've got 3 hours, because people get there so early now, got 3 hours to go over a 15-minute match. And if something goes wrong, they're both staring at each other because they don't know what to do to get out of the situation.
Very true. And I've seen them where they do the spot over again if they screwed it up.
Yeah.
And they'll just do it right over again. You're like, wait, what the hell? They're doing the same thing over again? Because they couldn't remember the stopping point and they can't improvise. So they just go, all right, and they just do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And get to the next spot. It just looks so, it looks so too fake, too choreographed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's why I love guys who go, we'll just call it in the ring. Not that happens that much anymore, but as a referee, I'll go to someone for a match and say, what do I need to know? I don't want to hear the whole match. What do I need to know? So that way my reactions are natural.
Like you're the referee. What do you think is the most important part of the referee? Is it kind of being the third man in the ring and directing traffic, or no, staying out of the way almost?
Well, you can direct traffic by staying out of the way. John and I were experts at that.
Nice.
We had to really stay out of the way a lot of the times. But now you let the guys do their thing and, keep an eye on, you're always keeping an eye on the time and you're always looking out for something. Maybe something's wrong with the ring. In the ECW days, you had to have eyes in the back of your head looking to see if somebody was going to jump into the ring, or if you were going through the crowd, someone was going to try to get a little too close to the action.
Right.
So there's a lot of other duties than just counting to three or counting them out. You know, there's like making sure that they're not knocked out.
Right.
Or if they are hurt, what to do. So there's a lot more to it than people think.
Oh, yeah, big time, a lot more. Did you guys have an earpiece or no?
No, we never did in ECW. The only time we did was when we did the WWE pay-per-views. And it was the connection was so bad. It was horrible. You couldn't hear a single thing. And I've done a couple of streaming system events the last couple of years, and they go, do you want an earpiece? Or they'll say, here's your earpiece. And I said, well, I've never worked with one before. And they're like, well, okay, give it a try. And it's the technology is a lot better than it was in 2005. But right. I did one event where I said, my earpiece isn't working. And they looked up and they go, you know what to do.
Right. Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've used them a couple times the last handful of years, but if I could go without them, that'd be great. Sometimes there are a couple times where I've avoided it and they're like, where's your earpiece? I'm like, damn it. They got me.
What did you think about the WWE one night stand? Speaking of, the earpiece and stuff, what did you think about that? Did you like that? Not like it? Did you feel like it wasn't really true to ECW because it was a WWE production?
Right. Now, I like the first one. It kind of felt like this is the direction we were headed because the technology was upgraded a little bit and things that would have helped enhance our show that maybe we could have gotten a TV deal or had more people have eyes on us. The second one was a completely different animal. That was definitely a WWE product. And we were treated like, it wasn't like we weren't part of the program, that we were there as just extras. But the first one, they were very welcoming. Vince came into the meeting. We were having a meeting and Vince came in and, guys, go out there and give them the ECW fans what they want to see. And no need to worry. Paul didn't sign the checks. Ha ha ha. He walked out,
Wow, nice.
the comedy styles of Vince McMahon.
Wow, good line.
But yeah, there were two different definitely two different things. And if you watch them both back to back, you know they're two different entities.
Yeah, the first one is a lot better.
Yeah, I thought that was a good farewell to the fans. That, you know, we never gave them a final show to say thank you, and I thought that was the best shot we could do with who we had. There were obviously people we couldn't use that should have been there because they were working for TNA at the time. And I just felt, you know, this is the best shot of what we could give them. And I hope that they enjoyed it. And I think they did. I think that pay-per-view was probably one of the most popular pay-per-views that they had put out.
Very good. Now, who was actually booking that? Would it be Paul or would it be Vince, or who's actually booking that show?
I think Paul was. Paul was there. Yeah, Paul was there. I think Tommy too had a lot to do with it. Tommy was the guy who called me.
Oh, okay.
About the whole thing, and Tommy was, I don't know if he was still in the ring at the time, but I know he was in the office for talent relations. So yeah, between the two of them, and I'm sure they still had to run it past Vince at the time.
I was curious, Mike Awesome Tanaka, obviously, right? You refereed that match.
Oh yeah,
is that the real? Like, it's Mike Awesome. Was he supposed to win? Was that the real finish for the match?
Oh yeah, that was what was supposed to happen. That was completely 100% beat the living crap out of each other with chairs and fly over the top rope onto a table.
Yeah, crazy. Those two always had crazy matches. But
yeah,
I was just curious, like with Mike going over, I was like, wow, is that supposed to happen? Just because there was always obviously bad blood because he walked out and went to WCW with the title in 2000. Right. I was just surprised. Like, wow, Awesome actually. Was he supposed to win?
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think of that, just as far as him walking out with the title at that point? And then kind of almost coming back into the fold. Did you think like, oh, God, Mike Awesome, like,
backstage? No, I think it was... Yeah, I think it was water under the bridge. I think everybody kind of felt like, well, he had to go, had to do what he had to do. Maybe it wasn't the right way to do it, but he had to go. You know, he needed to make more money and the whole situation of pay and all that. And, you know, everyone understood in the long run. I'm sure afterwards, when it happened at first, I think everybody was willing to take a shot at him if they had the chance.
Yeah, right.
That's why he came in. That's why he came in the front door and left out the back at the front door for that.
Right.
For the match against Taz.
That's right. Yeah, because he had to drop the title or agreed to drop the title.
Right.
So weird. So a WWF guy beats a WCW guy at an ECW show. Yeah, it's so interesting.
For the ECW title. Yeah.
Yeah. What? What a weird world that was. Basically, worlds colliding at that point.
Yeah, it was. Never happened before, and it'll probably never happen again.
Yeah, definitely not, I don't think. Now, as far as that bump, though, at One Night Stand, was that supposed to happen?
Here's the story on that. Mike came to me and said, after the match, I'm going to powerbomb you. And I was like, okay. Or did you tell anyone that? No, I'm not going to tell them because they probably won't let me do it. I'm like, okay. I appreciate that you want me to do it for you, but I'm very fat and I'm not very athletic and I don't have I'm not a good jumper. I don't have a lot of ups. Are you going to be able to pick me up? Yep, no problem. I'll be able to pick you up. So match finishes and Mike got torn up pretty bad. His legs were cut pretty bad from the table when he went over the top rope. And I said, are you okay? Plus, you know, it was a hell of a match. They were pretty tired. I said, are you okay? Yes. Do you still want to do this? Yes. Okay. We get back in the ring and I raise his hand. And that's when they were doing a replay. I think they showed me raising his hand. Then they're at a replay, and that was when he kicked me and powerbombed me. And he was not as strong as he thought he was at the time. Mike was very strong, but he was kind of weakened by the match and almost landed me on my neck. And if you go back and watch it, it's not a pretty bump. And they showed it on a replay because nobody knew it was happening. And my thought was, well, should I tell before the match, my thought was, well, should I tell somebody about this? Should I tell, you know, camera guy or Briscoe who's in Gorilla or, you know, should I tell Tommy or Paul? And I thought, no, I don't want that stooge name coming back. So I didn't stooge it off, and I didn't want him to lose any problems that, or any issues that he could have had that could have developed to keep him from getting a job or, you know, advancing his career. So I kept my mouth shut about it, and maybe I should have spoken up about it, but it happened. It was what it was. And luckily the next door worked.
So no severe injuries from that.
No. It was funny because at the time I was trying to think, was I running? I was running the Monster Factory at the time, and one of the students called me on the way back, and because we had a car load that drove up from the Philly area, and he calls and he starts busting my stones about the power bomb, and I put him on speaker, and I'm like, John Finnegan was driving. John, you just hear this son of a bitch? He thinks it's a joke that I almost broke my neck. We're lucky we're not going to the hospital right now. That son, he thinks it's, you know. And I went off on him, and like the next time I came to the school and he was there, he was scared shitless. Like I was going to make him run for a week.
Did he get any heat from WWE for doing that? Because obviously it's not a part of the.
I don't know. I didn't hear. I don't think he did. As far as I know, no, nothing was said to me about it.
I guess Paul was like, if it looks good, I'm okay with it, as long as it looks good. Yeah.
Run that back. Let everybody see it.
Right.
He's powerbombing everyone.
Did you hate taking bumps like that, or you didn't mind?
Oh yeah, I was not good at taking bumps. Not very. That's another reason I was a referee. I was not very athletic.
Is it something like? Is you just have to do it though? If it's part of the match, come on, we need you to take a bump here.
That yeah, kind of it would depend on the type of bump and the extent of the bump. Where if I couldn't do it and John couldn't do it, it'd be like, hey, Pee Wee, come here. You know, get Pee Wee Moore to do it, or Mike Keener. Excuse me. Mike Keener was a trained wrestler before he was a referee. So Mike would do some same with Loke, H.C. Loke.
Yeah.
He would do some stuff. So we need you to go through a table. Come here, Loke.
Keener, pretty big guy too.
Yeah, good sized guy.
Now, what did you think though? Okay, so one night stand, the first one's good. The second one, you know, it's okay. Not as good as the first one, obviously. But what did you think in basically 07 when Vince brings back ECW? Do you think like, okay, this is great, ECW is back? Or did you think maybe the opposite, like, oh God, what's he going to do?
Yeah, no, we thought that'd be a little bit different. We didn't realize how different it would be. And I stuck around for a cup of coffee and walked away before, you know, I looked like an idiot, because their story to, at least to me, changed. It was, you know, we're going to run shows and we want you at every show. Great. Where's my contract? No contract yet. All right. So I go to TV in Trenton. It's a half hour drive for me. No contract. All right. We'll see you next week in Albany. Okay. Go to Albany. Now that's a 3 hour drive, at least a 3 hour drive. And no deal. And I'm thinking, things have changed, and their story changed. It became, well, we want you to shows that you can get to. All right. So the next week was in West Virginia. And I'm like, nah, I'm not going to West Virginia. Too far of a drive for me. I've got my own business outside of wrestling. I'm not going to miss 2 days of work, because when I'm not working, I don't get paid. So I skipped that. And the story became, well, we'll let you know what we need you for. Okay. Didn't hear from them. I didn't call them. The next two shows, because I expected a phone call. And that's, I'm guilty of thinking that.
Right.
But the next two shows were at the arena. It was a house show at the arena. And then they did TV at the Wells Fargo here in Philadelphia. Didn't hear from them. And I'm not a person, never been a person to beg for work. So I didn't go to the shows, and I didn't call to see if they needed me. And that was it. Thought if they don't need me right here in Philly to work in front of the home crowd, then they don't need me at all. And I said, well, I'm done with them. And you know, like I said, there was never a contract offered. So you know, I'm not going to get strung along every week. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to drive to, you know, Milwaukee, and I'm not going to drive to Chicago. I can't do that. So I said, you know, that's it.
Kind of weird, though. A TV company's not giving contracts to the guys that are on the TV. It's strange.
Well, they had, if you look at it, you go back and look at it, they had their own referees in line anyway. So they never wanted us anyway.
Yeah. Yep. They were going to make it their version of ECW.
Right.
The zombie and all that stuff.
Yeah. The zombie.
I wonder, did like Paul think that was like kind of a means to an end to kind of get his way, get ECW back and do that jokey stuff? Or did he not really have control and this was like Vince and whoever, Stephanie running?
Yeah, he didn't have control. He would present things and of course they would shut him down and say, well, you're not using John Cena or you're not using, you know, Rick, the Big Show or, you know, Kurt Angle or whatever. You know, the guys that are WWE that are now, you know, being, that should be pushed in ECW. We don't want you to push Balls Mahoney or the Sandman or Sabu.
Right.
We want you to push our guys that are on a regular, you know, better pay scale, I guess.
When basically, you know, you leave and you're done with them, do you go back to the Monster Factory or did you never leave the Monster Factory?
No, I never left.
Oh, you never left. Okay.
Yeah, I never left. And I was doing a little bit of helping with a little bit of the training. I was doing some of the mainly running the office, getting people to come in and with their wanting to learn how to wrestle and all that kind of stuff. And then it kind of, Pat Kenny says this all the time, only in wrestling, everything kind of broke off into different atmospheres, and the Monster Factory went this way, but we still had the promotion that was tied into the Monster Factory. We called it Old Time Wrestling because we wanted to do more old school type stuff. And when you're using a lot of students, you need to do that. You can't get crazy with a student show. So we kept the name OTW, Old Time Wrestling, and we kept the school open because the building was in my name. So basically we told everyone that was associated with the factory at the time, your ring's going to be outside Saturday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, take it. And everything that's yours, take. And we're keeping the building. And we're keeping the OTW name. And we went on from there. We ended up moving to another building. In fact, the building that we had is now the one that Matt Tremont runs H2O in.
Oh, okay.
He took over our lease for us when I got away from it. But yeah, we trained guys. When I was at the Monster Factory, it was Sheamus and Tank Tolan and Cliff Compton. And Damian Priest was with us in OTW, and then he went back to the Monster Factory. So yeah, we QT Marshall, we had a couple of guys come through that, you know, I feel some responsibility for. It helped them get to whatever level they wanted. But I ended up shutting down OTW. Just got to be too much responsibility on me. And this was pre-pandemic. So, and I had had a heart attack, and I just, you know, just got to be, started to get to be too much. We ended up leaving the building, and we were running a couple of small buildings. Cause when we had our own building, we were running Saturday afternoon, every Saturday, except in the summertime, cause it was god awful hot in there. There was no air conditioning. And then we would run monthly nighttime shows. So we were averaging 40 to 45 shows a year.
Oh, not bad.
And so it just kind of burned out with that. And we had two buildings that we were running one month, one the next month. And we were doing eight shows a year, and then the pandemic came in and just got to be too much, and I closed it down, sold the ring, and that's it. And then the guys that I sold the ring to, ECWA, their next event was a Super 8, one of their Super 8s, and they said, hey, are you interested in reffing? I was like, oh, I haven't done it for 15 years, because when I ran OTW, I took this from Paul's handbook, not to put yourself in front of the crowd, you know, let the boys have the show. In fact, our last show, I let the champion do the talking. I didn't come out at all. Didn't come out and take a bow or anything. It's all you. It's all the guys. But I was like, yeah, okay. And I got to work with John Finnegan again. And that kind of got me going with reffing and doing appearances again now.
Gotta love that. Gotta love it. As we hit the wind down, we head towards the finish. Pretty good damn resume of guys, by the way, that you name from Monster Factory. Some of those guys are pretty famous. You know, obviously part of WrestleMania this year and stuff. So
right.
Some very famous guys.
Yeah, if you look at the Wikipedia for Sheamus, it said that I trained him. I did not train him. I was at the Monster Factory when he trained. Probably the best advice I gave him was to go home to Ireland, because his visa was about ready to run out. And I said, if your visa's screwed, you're not coming back here, and WWE won't touch you. So he went home.
Great advice.
And they were mad because they wanted to get more money out of him. I'm like, no, this guy's got to go home.
Yeah, saving him there, big time.
Yeah, it paid off in the end.
Oh, big time, yeah, for sure. Now, as far as ECW, did they owe you money? That the old story, hey, they owed me this, they owed me that. Like Shane Douglas, he's got the exact amount that they owed him. Do you have that, or wasn't?
Yeah, I have it written down on a piece of paper. If you were to ask my wife, she'd probably have it to the penny right off the top of her head.
Yeah. So they did. They did owe you.
They did owe me, but not just for wrestling, for the behind-the-scenes stuff. And I did a partial tear of my ACL, so all the medical bills that I thought had been paid, 2 months after they filed for bankruptcy, all the medical bills came back to me.
Oh my God.
So I threw that in the accounting bin.
Right. They technically owed it to you. Yeah.
Right.
What is your favorite match? You mentioned Taz, Sabu, and obviously awesome in Tanaka there, but what's your favorite match, or maybe the best match you were part of?
I look at it a different way as compared to, but if I have to say like the best match, because I can't say that either. The most fun I had, probably Guerrero and Malenko. But I had fun working with the BWO, and it's a completely different match because it was just, right, you know, fun to be out there with them. But I look at things a little differently, and I always say the most important match that I was involved in was the triple threat match with Sabu, Shane Douglas, and Terry Funk, where it was a 60-minute draw, no winner. That got us on the map for tape traders. And that was a big step, you know, into moving up to getting closer to those one and twos, WWE and WCW. And then after that would be Taz and Sabu. Great build up to that match. You know, two guys didn't touch each other for 2 years. And just the fans could just feel the pressure. You know, they were right in the pressure cooker with them, and that building was ready to blow its top when the bell rang for that match.
Now, what do you got coming up next? What's coming up down the pike?
Well, like I said, I took the month of March off, and I'm going to give them some advertising here. It's this Friday night. The 15th, is that the right date? I don't have a calendar in front of me, but ISPW is a company I work for a lot, run by Tommy Fierro, and they run North Jersey a lot and some of Central and South Jersey a little bit too. They have a show coming up, and the guest commissioner for the night, and we'll also be doing a meet and greet, is Mick Foley. And I'm really mad that I'm not going to be there for that, but like I said, I'm taking the month off to recover my knee. But coming up for Mania weekend, there's a show Thursday night, the 4th. I like I said, I don't have my calendar in front of me, so I'm not getting them. I might be getting the dates mixed up a little bit because there's so much going on that week.
Oh yeah.
With you know, everything, but there's an event that night at the arena. That'll be my first time back there since 2005.
Whoa.
And I know that Rob Van Dam will be taking on Mike Bailey, and Josh Alexander will be taking on Masato Tanaka. So those two matches are intriguing. I know the FBI is going to be there. I know Savio Vega is going to be there. They've starting to announce stuff for the show. So I'll be doing that. And then for WrestleCon, I'll be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday and Sunday, I'll be sitting with Paul Richard, who was a former WWE or WWF and ECW referee. Paul was good friends with the Eliminators, so he came in when they came in to ECW, came with them. And Paul and I have been good friends ever since. But Saturday is going to be special because the first time we've done it together, John Finnegan and I are going to be doing autographs together. Oh, nice. at WrestleCon. And that's from 9 to 2, all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But John and I will be there Saturday only from 9 to 2. And then I know, and Friday, that's as much as I know for Friday and Saturday. And Sunday afternoon, I'll be at SPO Wrestling in Burlington, New Jersey, which is probably about a half hour from where WrestleMania is going to be at the Link. Lincoln Financial Field, we call it the Link. Yeah. It's about a half hour away from there, and the show is at 2:30 in the afternoon. So you'll be able to get back to WrestleMania and get into Philly in plenty of time. And what they're doing is they're offering the first two matches for free outside of the building. And because they're both going to be in cage match, they're going to be two cage matches. And then they're going to open the doors to paying customers. And hopefully those two matches will entice you to come in. Actually, the match is going to be to determine the first women's SPO wrestling champion, and also the other one is going to be a tag team scramble match. And then when you come inside, and hopefully you're coming and pay for the rest of the event, the main event, or let me say before that, HC Loke and Tony DeVito, the Carnage crew, will be having their last match together. Tony is getting ready to hang it up. So that'll be the last match as a tag team for them. And but the main event will be the SPO wrestling champion, Homicide, will be taking on Too Cold Scorpio.
Wow, that's a good one. Damn.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting match. And there I'm not the referee, I'm their commissioner. So it's nice. A little bit of a day off.
Yeah.
Physically.
Pretty good.
But that's the first week in April. I know I've got a lot of stuff with, like I said, ISPW. Check them out. Another company, LTW, that I work for. EHW is Extreme Hybrid Wrestling. I haven't worked for them yet, but I keep running into things with like injuries and whatnot that I can't make it. But I'm getting to their shows. Trying to think. There's other companies I work for, but I'm working a lot of the indies in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and New York.
Keeping very busy. Where can everybody follow you?
If you go right here, learn this now.
Yeah.
That's where you can catch me at Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. And that has my email address on it. If you want to book me for an event, any kind of fan convention, Comic-Cons, all that kind of stuff. You can do that there. Also do seminars. I've done a couple of seminars, help young referees get out there and get better. So that's how you, probably the best way to get a hold of me. I'm also on Facebook, and I think it's the reads the same way for Facebook. I'm really getting good at this.
Yeah.
This reverse thing on camera.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for all the time. Keeping very busy, but appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. Hope you guys will see some of the fans out there at WrestleCon.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Sure, no problem. Thank you.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two-man power trip, where the power lies, brother.